Just wanted to give you a little heads up before this episode gets started. I was remote on this one. The internet was not the best. I tried to cut out all of the weird robot parts, but there might be a few lingering in there. So proceed with caution, and thank you guys for listening.
The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 94. I am recording from Texas still, but I'm in Waco, so I'm kind of remote, so the audio is probably going to be a little wackadoo. And as you can see, my backdrop is quite lovely. I'm sitting on the bed. Obviously, I have no pants on, you know, so all I needed was the shirt, so we're good there. Much like Tom Smith. Where are you at, Tom Smith?
I'm in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh my goodness. How long has it been since you've been on a cast? Maybe a year?
No less. I think I was on, but there was a complaint that I talked too much.
Oh.
And I just want to say, whoever gave that feedback? that I'm going to continue talking a lot.
All right, excellent. Well, that's the only reason.
And I also met someone at BSD Can.
Oh, congratulations. When are you guys getting married?
but he was a fan. He was a Brothers Wisp fan.
I didn't think it was that funny.
And he came over. And what was funny was I only met him at the closing ceremony of the BSD CAD. So it was pretty cool. I've got to actually upload a picture. I forget his name, but he was really super friendly. And he was a Brothers Wisp fan. And he goes, "Hey, you Tom?" And I went, "Yes."
Dude.
And I had a game badge that said Tom Smith too.
Goodness, man, you're famous for
but all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I was about to start naming a few off.
It was more like oh, I love Greg, but you know so I was like the little brother of the Brothers Smith.
Yeah. I somehow doubt that. You're the charming rogue of the group, without a doubt. All right. We've also got Mikey from Chicagoland. What's up, Mikey?
Not much. Just barely made it. My nieces and nephews are over. About a month ago, we got one of those cheapo pools finally set up. And had some family over enjoying it. And I looked at my phone. It was 5:55. I'm like, I should probably hurry up.
Yeah, I'm in Waco today. It is my grandma's 100th birthday. So we were down here celebrating that. Yeah, dude, it's crazy.
Awesome.
A full decade.
So we have to look forward to you for a very long time, don't we?
I seriously doubt it, dude. I'm thinking max a decade at most. So, but I always tell everybody, I'm going to ruin this body. I mean, I am going to be burnt. I'm going to be toast by the time I'm dead. So I'm going to live it up, man. As best I can. All the drugs, all of the alcohol. So let's see. Let's get some of the stuff out of the way. Pennytone is still sponsoring this one. I think he's still doing the same deal. So pennytone.com, you go there. It's a hosted VoIP platform. You've got business customers. You want them to have phone systems. You don't want to deal with it. You throw them over to pennytone.com, and he will give you their first month's bill in whatever form you want. So Tom would get another pallet of Guinness. Isn't that what they sent you?
Yeah, no, the RF Elements sent me literally a load of barrels of beer, which was pretty cool. So I have to give a shout out to, so they would have to deliver by pallet. And it was kind of embarrassing because the pallet, it came on a pallet which doesn't fit in the front door. So I had to unpack the pallet in front of all the neighbors, bring in various barrels of beer, and it just...
and they thought you'd gotten a hold of that problem. Yeah.
No, but it was cool. It took me a while to get through it, believe it or not. But yeah, they were utterly impractical. So to RF Elements, thanks for the beer, but next time maybe just give me smaller cans and lots of them.
Gotcha.
Because it was kind of like... It's kind of like that alcoholic solution to an alcoholic problem. You know, it's like, I'll just have the one, but it's like a gallon.
Gigantic, yeah.
Maybe 2 gallons.
All right.
So, but it was cool, I have to say. So I'll have to give a shout out. So I'll have to buy JT an old beer or even Tassus an old beer the next time I see them.
When is the next time you're going to see us Americans?
Well, I think the next time you go to a BSD conference, certainly.
It wasn't the last one up in Canada?
The last one was up in Canada. There's one in VBSD Con. And let me tell you where that is.
Well, I don't care if you're not going to be there. I'm not interested.
Well, it's in the Hyatt Regency in Reston, Virginia.
Oh,
and
dude, that's
September 5th to the 7th, 2019.
That's going to be close to Miller.
So I think I would certainly recommend going to them because they're pretty technical, the crowds, and very little salespeople, which is always sometimes a good thing, you know, and no liars. Liars, not lawyers. Lawyers are okay. Liars, not so much.
Same difference.
But aren't lawyers liars?
No, they don't. They just get other people to twist what they're saying and stuff.
Of course.
But yeah, no, it was pretty, I have to say, yeah, so that would be the next time I see you guys is at a BSD conference. There's one in, if you want to go to Norway, to Lillehammer. I think they pronounce it Lillehammer. Or you might.
Oh, yeah, over where they had the Olympics.
Yeah. Isn't that, I think Ollie's up there in Norway, isn't he? He's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
not, I think I remember joking that he was Swedish, but I know he's not Swedish, so I think he's over in Norway up there. I think we lost Tom, so we're just going to have to bust it around him. No, he's back.
Yeah.
There he goes.
I thought Ireland was getting some decent internet for once.
We do have decent internet. I think my Skype crashed. My laptop's been acting really kind of weird because of... so it's not the internet in Ireland is bad.
So so
all your American companies over here and steal all your jobs. Trump's going to bring home.
Is that why you guys had to do Brexit to keep us from stealing all your jobs?
Well, we didn't do Brexit. Our neighbors to the east did Brexit, which I think was just to piss us all off.
Aren't you still a colony?
we keep losing him at just the right time. So let's jump to...
I just wanted to say we're not a colony. I just want to confirm that. And that Mike Hammett wishes we were still a colony. He probably wishes he was still a colony.
Colony of bacteria. All right, so Mikey, I see Wisp America is coming to Dallas in March. What's the story with that, dude?
So there's no links yet, so I don't, can't make hotel reservations or anything like that. But Wisp America is Wisp's spring show. It usually moves around the east side of the country, and I just saw a day or two ago that they're going to be. Not far from you. Kate and I will be going.
Oh, sweet. That's in my back. That's on my back porch. I should pop up there and see it. Maybe you guys will let me talk about something or other. I don't know what it would be about. I remember at one point they made an offer for Wisp America to do a BGP talk. That might be interesting.
Yeah, that will be.
I'll see if I can't get a hold. Well, I don't know if they've made the agenda yet, but... Well, I assume not, but I imagine sometime later this year. But I'll put in a good word.
Stay on the lookout. Sounds cool. All right, Tom. There was an, a disclosure for a vulnerability. It's the Urgent 11. What is that? VxWorks vulnerabilities and effects. Things like Dell PowerConnect switches, Sonic Walls apparently are very sensitive to it. I guess, what is it, like a root escalation sort of thingamajig?
I didn't even follow that one,
Come on, you're supposed to be my security dude. What's up?
Well, you know, it's like everything in security. Sometimes people drop the ball. And this is one of those times that Tom has, in fact, dropped the ball. Where was this on your list of things you were going to talk about?
It's Urgent 11. It's right there. It's the top one.
Okay, Urgent 11. Well, I couldn't start reading it out.
But Tom can't read.
Yeah. So apparently there's a lot of kit out there. Anything that runs VxWorks, I guess. Cameras, phones, you know, like IP phones, all kinds of various things out there. So be mindful if you've got those. And Thomas was very adamant on if you've got a Sonic wall, you need to be updating it post-haste. I'm assuming there's probably some older Sonic walls that are end of life or end of support, you know, yeah, that are floating out there that are just going to keep running until somebody decides to poke a hole in them. So use caution, everybody.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of these devices, particularly, and in fairness, we give Mikrotik props on one thing. At least they do offer updates to their software for ridiculous periods of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And to be honest with you, they've made upgrading as almost as painless as possible these days. So they're really getting on it.
Except for CHR. I would have to say their method of licensing on the CHR blows badly. Definitely. You know, like you type in the username password, you get your license, and then it says, oh, you now need to renew the license by such and such a deadline. So then you renew it again, and it's still locked out. So So the, on the CHR front, dumb.
Well, nothing's perfect first go around. They'll work it out. It'll be great soon.
It will. Yeah, version 7.
What a Tom thing to say. That's messed up. So while we're talking go ahead.
Oh, say it's I also wish it was a bit easier to get the CHR loaded into your hypervisor. I mean, I can do it, but, you know, there's a bit of a hurdle there for a lot of people.
Like on Proxmox, it's kind of a pain in the butt.
No, it's straightforward enough. Well, what you have to do is you have to use the raw image, then rename it, and then you create the disk in Proxmox, and then you just copy the disk over the disk, and it'll work. So you create just a blank one.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, you know, it works, but, you know, for a lot of people, that's a quite a hassle. I mean, yeah, I can do it.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, you're not too bad at technology, Mike.
Well, I'm apparently, out of the three of us, you have a laptop that doesn't work, and Greg has internet that doesn't work, and so I guess I'm...
You're winning
hashtag
today.
Hashtag winning, there you go.
Although, I'm not sure.
Making America great again, all in his own. All in his own, Mike Hammett.
All right, so while we're talking about Mikrotik, so go ahead and throw in that 4011's SFP Plus interfaces are having issues after going to 645, what is it, .2 or 1, one of those. I think a lot of people's SFP Plus interfaces just stopped working. I know Nikki B was one of the ones affected. Yeah, Proxmox 6.1. Apparently, Andrew Thrift was talking about how they're getting a network overhaul, the idea being that they're going to introduce VXLAN and EVPN so that your, I guess, remote clusters will have layer 2 connectivity between the two. So you can have kind of some geographic separation and still do all of the fun little clustering things.
Yeah, but I would have thought they would have still been able to do that if you had decent, you know, data center grade switches like Arista or something like that, you know, and you have the VXLAN on the switches. But yeah, no, like, I played around with Proxmox 6, not in a cluster yet, it was just experimenting with SRIOV and stuff like that. It's, you know, I have to say the SRIOV implementation of Proxmox, it's very, you know, they have GUIs for everything, but for the SRIOV stuff, you end up having to do a lot of, because, you know, you can do your vMotion or your, you know, you can do your live migrations with those type of bridged network implementations, but when you're doing PCI pass-through, it's significantly more difficult to do hot plug and PCIe and all that type of stuff. So generally you can't, so you have to shut down the machine, move it across, and then bring it back up. And obviously you're hoping that the MAC address, then you need to spin up your network function drivers with the same MAC addresses as you had before. So it's a lot less flexible but more performant, you know. It's a challenge. But yeah, VXLAN and EVPN in software, yeah, I suppose they'll be using DPDK and stuff like that. Does anyone know what implementation they're using?
I have no idea.
Or what software, VXLAN, or is this a native product that they're coming up with?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've been learning Ansible here recently. And have you played with any automation, Tom, either on the server or the network side?
Yeah, so like yourself, back in the day, I think we discussed this a few years ago, but like it was all shell scripts and PHP and, query a database and then try to do kind of global search and replace, and then basically SSH it into a box, using PLink from a Windows box. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've done some of that.
So PLink is just a bad light tool to effectively SSH into a box, run a series of commands in the shell, and then pop back out and report an error code. But so it was very clunky and horrible to manage. We started using Ansible a bit, but I would have to say that probably the master, again, making America great again, our own very own Mike Hammett there. Remember you did a talk and I videoed it illegally, Whispering Palooza, and I couldn't present it, or I couldn't put it on the Brothers Whisper because they had the copyright done for Whisper Palooza just yet. Pretty good talk even for Mike.
That's saying something. Yeah, but I've started playing with Ansible a lot, right? And Ansible is owned by Red Hat. It's open source. So Ansible has kind of two pieces, right, for as far as automation goes. You have Ansible Engine, and then you have a GUI they slap on top called Tower. Well, Tower's the commercial one if you want to pay for support. There's a lot of features that are nice in Tower. I see the reasons why people buy Tower, and it's like $10 a host sort of thing. But they also have the open source version that's AWX, right? So it's pretty easy web interface to install, right? So Ansible, the engine itself, you can create basically scripts to make configuration changes. They call them playbooks, and you can run those all day long. The problem is you don't have any kind of user permissions, any delegation of control through the command line, right? Anybody that can log in and run the commands can run the commands. The Tower actually gives you this online GUI where you can go in there, you can build these playbooks, you can create workflows in a visual way where you basically put these bubbles together, put a line in between and say, first run this thing, then run that. Like you could say first, spin up a new server in VMware. Next, install CentOS on there. Third, install your hardening, all of your security hardening on there, and it'll follow in line. And you can have fail safes, right? So if something goes wrong, you can say, okay, do this, and you can have it undo things and all that stuff. But it's really interesting once you get under the hood. It's so much simpler than I had anticipated. It's made for people that aren't programmers. I mean, I did computer science, and I still write scripts a lot, and I still maintain some applications that I've custom developed, but this is written in YAML, yet another markup language, so it's very readable. You open these things, and it doesn't matter how adept you are at, programming, you don't really have to be a programmer. You don't have to be a server guy. You can look at these things and understand what's happening pretty natively, and they have kind of these interpreters built in called modules. So for the big boys, it's a really amazing tool, right? If you're Cisco, Junos, Fortinet, F5, they have these idempotent modules. The idea being, I can tell it to add VLAN 100 across 1,000 switches, and it will first check the switch. If it has VLAN 100, it'll say, okay, I don't have to do anything. If it's not there, then it'll go ahead and apply it right across all that infrastructure with just one click. So you create those playbooks, you put it in Tower, and you can let your most junior network guy give him access to, like, provision new customer, you know, and then he can fill in some blanks, and then boom, it'll just go out and push all that stuff. So it's pretty awesome what you can do with it. Now, MikroTik, they do have some modules in there now, right, for kind of the wispy sort of guys listening that may not have a Cisco or a Juniper. The only thing with that is it's a command module, which means you can just throw stuff in there. It won't verify first whether it already exists. Yeah. You have to add kind of some of your own logic into it. But it's really quite easy to do. So if you're on like a Cisco environment, I've seen some examples where they call it a source of truth. So in the server, you can have its entire configuration in a file, right? And every time you want to make config changes, you don't log into the router anymore. You just log into Ansible and you update that source of truth file. And then you tell Ansible, all right, push this configuration. And it will go out. So now all of your change control is built right in there, right? All of your logging, who can actually make the changes, it's all built in there. And also, think about this too, if that device ever tanks, you know, it's completely gone, you replace it with a new one, all you have to do is get it reachable on the network, and you tell Ansible, run the playbook, and it will go and update absolutely everything in there that needs to be. So it's a quite literally a duplication of whatever that device was instantaneously. It's pretty killer when you look at it like that. I was trying to think of some service provider use cases. I mean, one is you can do mass configuration changes pretty consistently with this thing, right? And fairly easily. And you can string playbooks together, right? It's not just run one command. All right, now let me edit the file. Now run this next command. You build these playbooks of like, this is what my security policy should look like. So this is what my firewalls will look like. And then you can have another one that says, this is what my base remote access looks like, or this is what my DNS settings. And then you can couple all of these together and say, run them all, right? Or if you just need to mass update all of your DNS servers, you update that one and you can push it, right? So it just, dude, it just makes mass configuration parity across all of your infrastructure so easy because you can break it out. And I'm talking about like a YAML file to do a DNS change in a MikroTik is, I mean, it's just a few lines. And most of those lines are actually you putting in comments so you know what's going on. It's just, it's crazy how simple it is. And the installation part of Ansible is as easy as install a server. And then like on CentOS, I said, yum install Ansible. And 45 seconds later, it was there. It's just, it's crazy how simple. I want to put kind of a guide together of zero to, mass configuration push of, say, a MikroTik together. And I think that article would really be like 30 minutes of you going through and duplicating all of these things. It's just, it's crazy easy. I don't know. I just, it kind of gets me fired up about allowing me to free up myself from a lot of the troublesome stuff. So like if in the data center world, if a ticket comes in for a new customer, I want to get it to where our NOC guys, the guys that don't know how to log into a router, go into Tower, push a button, and it prompts them for information. You know, which interface would you like to configure? What's their rate limit going to be? What's their customer name? You know, and you can have it go out to your PHP IPAM, pull the next /29, add that customer's name, pull back, have that subnet, and then configure your VRRP on both interfaces with the rate limit and everything else, and then push it, and then show you completion of the task, right? So if it's something mundane that you never want to have to do again, and you want just the jobbers over here answering the phones to be able to actually execute and deploy some of this stuff, you can really get it down to that. I don't know, man, it kind of like blows my mind to think I may never have to do that stuff again. Obviously, automation is not troubleshooting. It's certainly not monitoring, right? So you still have to know how this stuff works. You still have to be able to log in and troubleshoot that infrastructure, and you still have to monitor it adequately. But kind of compliancy, making sure that things are cookie cutter, it takes care of so much of that.
No, I think automation tools like that, and orchestration tools, they help, particularly when you start to scale your business, it makes it much more easy. And I think it's only when you start to scale and you start to have to go on pins that suddenly you realize manual changes to your network is just effing dumb. Sorry. Because once you introduce it, particularly when you have a sequence of commands to issue, particularly when you're looking at, if you're configuring interfaces, when you're putting layer 2 security rules and stuff like that, root apps, all that type of stuff, prefix lists and stuff like that, the likes of Cisco switches, there's an order in which you do it, otherwise you cause an outage for yourself, you don't actually apply the filter. You have to make your changes and then apply the map as opposed to the other way around. And if you don't get the sequence of commands correct, then they don't have the effect that you want on your switch. And that could ruin your day if you add in a rule to say drop all traffic, but that's meant to be the bottom rule after all the allowance, that you don't apply it properly. But if you don't automate this type of stuff, you're going to go nowhere very, very, very fast. I think actually in that terms of identity and stuff like that, I think MakerTik have a bit of work to do on that. Now, I haven't used their API, and I don't know how well that supports things like that. The scripts that can't work anymore is like print one, remove, IP root print, and then, remove zero. If you keep removing zero, you're going to just walk through your static root table if you have any in there, and you're going to root, it's not workable from that point of view. Now, that said, there are other commands in MakerTik, so you have to be very careful about how you issue the commands, as you were saying, the logic you were talking about building. And there are other orchestration platforms. I think Tommy Kernack's backup management and configuration management, I think that'll probably end up be going that way at some stage. So if I could read his mind, I'm not claiming to be in the know, but I certainly think it would be a logical next step for him, is that configuration and change management. I think he has some of that already built into Unibus. But then there's also other vendors or other projects like Napalm, Salt, and then you've got some of the other stack-based stuff like StackStorm. I know that INX actually use the Salt Stack, so IXP Manager, which I think my good friend Mike Hammett would know more about that, but they certainly, and I would have to say, so I learned an awful lot from INX and the INX meetings we have, where they talk about the elimination, or trying to eliminate, the silliness of manual configuration changes and people forgetting to remove configs. You have these ghosts, where, let's say you have a customer on port A, they leave, so they cancel the accounts, and you half remove the configuration, but you don't fully remove it, and then someone comes along to the port and just dumps in the configuration to put on customer B on port A, and then you have all these, these configuration artifacts from various different annual changes, which eventually catch up on you, cause problems. So certainly I would agree with you. I have to use Tower myself. I've used Ansible, but it is exciting, and Greg, I would agree that you should get psyched about that. Yeah. I guess.
Well, something else that kind of gets me fired up about it is, it's getting really popular in the news cycles and on packet pushers and guys like that. They're talking about how DevOps is becoming the future, and if you don't move with it, you're going to become obsolete, and all that stuff. So there was a bit of, apprehension and fear on my part. Am I becoming this dinosaur? Am I going to get left behind? Because there's this whole world that I apparently need to transition into, and I don't know anything about it. And it's just that fear of the unknown sort of thing. And then I dip my toe in, and in a week and a half, I'm already writing playbooks, orchestrating my lab stuff. Obviously, I'm not doing it in production yet because I just got started with it. But, it really is something that virtually anybody can jump into. So that kind of fear, that fear I was carrying inside of like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to get left behind. And there's this huge hole in my knowledge and all that stuff. While it's true that that was there, the fear that you're going to get left behind, I think, is unfounded, because if you know the CLI, if you understand the commands, it translates so easily to Ansible. I've never used, say, Napalm or Salt or really any of those other ones, but it also gives me hope too, right? So I'm going to start automating parts of the network stack, and then I'll never claim to be a server guy, right? I'll leave that to like the Nick Arellanos and all that stuff, you know, the Jimmys, the people that are way smarter than me as far as server infrastructure goes. But it also gives you the ability to automate not just your network stack, but your entire, I mean, everything, right? This can also do cloud orchestration. So it can reach out to your AWS or your Azure and orchestrate things there. So you can quite literally orchestrate your entire infrastructure, right? So if you log into a server and you're making it a DNS server, if you just keep track of all the commands you put in there, you can like duplicate that in a playbook, almost copy and paste, and you never have to manually rebuild that DNS server again.
Yeah, and like one of the key benefits, let's say what you and I did years ago that we both did with, you know, shell scripted, is one of the key nice things about these playbooks is they have the ability to, in a very structured way, query the state of the machine beforehand. Mm-hmm. Really powerful tool. So you can actually use it as an auditing tool to kind of say, okay, how many ports don't have layer 2 security policies applied? How many ports are protected? And you get that feed. You can get kind of start auditing. So you can dip your toes in the automation water, which is the way I would suggest you do it, being doubting Thomas like myself. And doubt, like, here's the thing, you don't want to go balls in and just say, right, let's do this and automate, because if you make a mistake, you're going to automatically screw your entire infrastructure. So and as an ISP, you don't want to do, like, you know, interface WLAN1 disabled, for instance. Like, that's, you know, whatever, you know, it's truck rolls times number of customers, you know. You know, it's a horrible even thought, and possibly not recoverable, you know, from a business or financial perspective. So it really is, you probably need those labs like what you're talking about there, right, that you're deployed at a lab that started first. But it means that you need to have accurate test labs reflected somewhat your infrastructure, so that you're not, do the, like what they used to nickname quick set as auto, F word, auto frustrate. Yeah, that's
the F word. That was it, yeah.
The auto frustrate button, you know. But yeah, look, I think that I think is, it was the quick frustrate. That's the quick set.
Yeah,
that's the one. Insert another one. Anyway, but Mike, you'd be very quiet there.
Well, to coin someone from before, you won't shut up.
I just want to say once again, mission accomplished.
You're going to hang the banner on your aircraft carrier now?
Oh, I'm going to do that land, you know, to fly in that. Was it an A-10 he landed, or was it an F? Was it 16 or what did he come in?
I have no idea. Past the memes of him on the ship, I have no idea what he landed on.
Yeah, well, it could be an F-16, because I don't know if they're a carrier. F-14s would be. I think they're already retired. So. Anyway, moves of America, you know, big planes, big spending on military.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that I didn't know anything about Ansible. I just saw somebody else's guide and how it didn't really tell you how to get there. It just said, here's an Ansible playbook. I was like, well, great, how do we use this? So I actually went through and, like, said, you know, you have to install the OS, but then I'll walk you through how to do it from there. And it was, you know, copy and paste this, change this. That was to clean your Ubiquiti radio that had gotten infected with the MFR virus.
Yeah.
It would clean, and I don't know if it would. It would not upgrade.
I think if I remember correctly, did you? I think you might have put a firewall rule in, maybe, or something like that. But yeah, I have to say, Mike's talk in Wispapalooza, was it 2016 or 15? Was pretty good. That when you did the automation one, it is well worth checking out that link.
It's like I'm looking back at it now, but since Ubiquiti changed their forum to the dumpster fire that it is now, it's like the worst. It's the worst forum anyone has ever had, and because they built it in house, they're committed to it.
Well, is it worse than some of the fanboys that are on Microtik forum, where you can say anything?
Well, no, like the forum. Well, the forum itself has a lot of fanboys, a lot of misinformation. But I was referring to the technical ability of the forum software. Its user interface and everything is just garbage.
And you remove people's, what do they call it, karma or whatever they call it, PowerPoints or whatever. I don't use forums often enough.
But I guess posts here now have upvote and downvote buttons, so that's good. But where I was going with that is that the entire playbook, the entire file is on one line. It's in. Oh, did we lose?
You did. Sorry about that.
There we go. Where I was going with that though is that the entire config snip that I put in, instead of having every line, it's now just one line all the way across. So it's completely useless if you don't know what it is, because you can't just copy and paste it anymore. You don't know where the new lines are supposed to be. So maybe it's not that useful to take a look back at.
Yeah, but I was looking at Nikki B's Ansible thing he put in there for modifying rate limits, in the QoS settings of Ubiquiti stuff. And I think he put like a null line. He said because Ubiquiti configurations are crap or something like that. I thought it was pretty funny. So they're getting a little weird.
Kind of a tangent on that. Earlier this week, I kind of started getting excited about ACS platforms, and not just the basic TR69, but all the other ones that come with it. The TR69 will do just configuration push and I think firmware updates and things like that, which is important as it is. But then the TR143 allows so much more. It allows, from what I can tell, I've only been paying attention to this stuff for like a week, but it allows you to do to issue pings and trace routes from the customer device. It allows you to do intrusive and non-intrusive speed tests. And the thing is that it's one pane of glass for every manufacturer that supports that protocol and has properly implemented it. So whether it's a zone ONT or a Comtrend modem, DSL modem or a Microtik router, should they add TR143, it's just the same user interface. Your customer support doesn't have to know anything about how to navigate each individual product you have in the field. It's just you can go there and you can change Wi-Fi passwords. You can change, do all these diagnostics. You can go look and you can see, again, on the hardware that supports this, you can go in and see signal strength and wireless quality for a particular client in their home network for the past year. And there's just a wealth of information, and it's not there's a lot of that's not automation specifically, but it's abstracting you from what your device is. It no longer matters what the device is, as long as it supports that protocol.
Yeah.
And I'm really, I'm getting real excited about that because it's like, that's kind of a customer support dream of just one interface, troubleshoot everything.
One interface to rule them all.
Yeah, no, I think it also reduces the barrier of entry for the support staff and, you know, means that it's easier, particularly like in, you know, places where, particularly where there's a lot of tech companies, like in Dublin and stuff like that, it'd be very hard to get technically proficient staff quickly because...
Obviously.
There's a lot of...
you say, Bazing!
Yeah. Mike's on fire today.
Oh, you derailed him.
But he was talking a bit too much there, wasn't he? You know, he was talking when he should be listening to one of my monologues. So.
As they say, God gave you two ears and one mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you talk, Tom.
Yeah, well, that was just bullshit. Like, you know, that's like, you know, those 90% of statistics are made up, including...
Included him freezing. So while he's frozen, I'm going to talk about some of the Yeelink adventures I've been having lately. I've been spinning up a 3CX PBX, and it's okay. It's a little clunky. Some of the features aren't as robust as I would like, but it's still effective. It seems reliable. I haven't really had too many configuration problems with it, but I eBayed a Yeelink phone, and that joker came in with a password. And if the admin password is changed, you can't factory reset it because to do a factory reset, it asks for an admin password. So I was a bit at a loss, and
I think it depends because for our Yeelink phones on 3CX, even if they have an admin password, I can still reset them. Just hold that button. So I think
there's a flag in the config file that you can set it to where factory reset requires it. And so these were apparently had that applied. And somebody on the Slack, I can't pull it up because I'm only single screened right now because I'm remote. I think it was Matthew Whiteley. I think it was him. But he sent me a link to a PDF buried in Yeelink's system or whatever, where you can TFTP an image, so it gives you the process to boot it up to TFTP screen, and then you've just got to find the specific files for your. Mine was a 41P, I think, and so I found those files, TFTP those jokers up, and it reset, and then I pulled the new firmware required for 3CX and uploaded that manually, and man, it worked a treat, so I was super happy about that. Something that really stuck in my craw, and I'm not sure if this is across a lot of the... Because, again, I've been kind of out of the open source PBX game for a hot minute. But the Yeelink stuff, with 3CX, it only provisions a single extension on a phone. You can't say, hey, this is a six-line phone, here's all the different extensions. You can create the extensions, and you have to manually go into the phone and add the additional extensions. It's not the worst thing in the world, but I'm exceedingly lazy. You know, I've been, just spoiled with, like, Cisco Call Manager because, you know, they know what all the phones are, and you could say these are all the extensions, and just it blasts it
Did
on
Did you me. Say you're spoiled with Cisco Call Manager?
In this one respect. In this one respect.
That Java abomination. No, sorry. But one thing I will say about the 3CX is that you can, although it's not supported officially, you can edit the templates so that you can get more lines. Now, that said, it's not easy. We did it, I think, to get two lines, but it's far from ideal.
I saw something in there about it. I was afraid if I did like an update, would it override those template files and I would just have to redo everything again? Or
There's a risk with that. But I think there's also custom. There's a custom folder. There's a particular folder. If you change the default one, yeah, you're screwed. But I think you can put a custom folder.
Sure. I've made custom templates. I think it was just I just chose what model I wanted, copied that to a new one, and then customized that one. I added a record button, so that way when they were on a call, they wanted to record, they would just hit that button, and then it would turn green, and then hit it when they're done.
But you not just hit up the guys in Utah for a copy of the call conversation, no?
Yeah.
Just do an FOI and then it's, you know, the DM Freedom of Information Act as well. Yeah. So you just go, you know, there was this meme on the internet, it was cool, like, it's like, I lost all my photos, I asked NSA for a backup, and they wouldn't give it to me, you know. Hi, everyone on the call. But I have to say, 360 is a nice system, although it's changing very rapidly, and sometimes... Like, it's weird. Maybe I'm just getting old, and now 38, and maybe I'm...
Oh, man, you are old.
Yeah, same age as me.
And it's, you know, but, like, sometimes you kind of go, change sucks, you know, particularly when it's not well thought out.
Like the Ubiquiti form.
Well, you see, I think, if you're participating in a forum, I think you're already losing, because if you're asking a question on a forum, you're definitely losing. If you're trying to enlighten people on a forum, and we know there are certain people in our community that cannot be enlightened no matter how much you enlighten them, that also includes people in the paycheck of the companies we're trying to enlighten. Hello. And, you know, I will say that. You know, you have to wait for a penny to drop and then go, I have this great idea. Okay, good. But I'm joking. They don't speak like that. When you're on a forum, like, I was talking to one of my engineers during the week, and he was saying, I'm going to apply this command. And I said, do you understand the command? I went, look at where you got it from, the forum. I said, this is like, you know, there's an information quality hierarchy. And I said, first you go to the manuals, then to the best practices guides. Usually the best practices guides are far more easier to read than the manuals. Then maybe how-to articles or white papers, they're pretty good. And if there's absolutely nothing else on the internet, then you look at the Brothers Whisp Slack channel. No, that's actually the next one. The Brothers Whisp Slack channel, pretty good. The videos, like these videos, are just absolutely authoritative and absolutely...
Oh, pure gold, yeah.
Pure gold. Insert sponsorship here. But, like, no, it's... And then you get onto forums, and then it's, like, blind leading some of the blind, deaf leading some of the deaf, and then sometimes when a vendor has time and resources... they may make a comment that is helpful or, in that case, not. As in, sometimes they just go, that is not supported, you shouldn't do it. And they're like, well, shit's broken, how are we going to fix it? Or something else. Or if it's a security thing and you've seen mine, you'll have some guy making very intelligent conversation and points about security. And then you'll have fanboys shoot him down and attack him personally. You know, it's just the way it happens. But I've gotten over it. It's 2 years ago. I'm okay now. Therapist it went very well.
That's good. I don't know. I'm still a fan of forums, because then it puts it into, you know, the search engine. So I can actually Google for a problem and find it in the forum. Not necessarily. I mean, yeah, there's sometimes there's a lot of middle. You know, there's that middle chunk that you just take and you throw it away. But you got where the question was asked and then where it actually was answered. Those are usually two pieces of gold. So I liked it.
I'm just saying you'd be panning a hell of a lot of shit to find that gold. That's the problem.
Well, sometimes that, you know, you've been hunting an hour and it's that one nugget that saves your bun. So.
Well, here's the thing. If there's no other information available, then yes, a forum is probably a good place to go to. But that's if there's no other information available. And one of the criticisms I'd have, say, of Google, despite their massive success, right? So I'm not saying Google's search engine's bad. And every time my browser defaults to another search engine, I go, man, how come I always want a Google search engine? Do you ever notice that? It's like any other search engine, it's just it's a trash fire. It's a shit sandwich without the bread. Like, it's just brutal. And you've got all this, sorry, excuse me the language of the profanities.
To be sure,
But one of the issues that Google search engine is that if people are talking about a topic on a forum, then that pushes its ranking up. You know, it's like, if people are talking about this, this must be relevant. And it's like, yeah, but then you could have the genius who actually wrote a salient point in a white paper at the start of the whole, and it's stale content, so it gets pushed down. And that's where the problem I have with that. So Google, you're doing it wrong, call me. I'll help you do it right and maybe make it rainable.
Yeah, but see, that it's like all of the idiots that are talking about it, they're probably talking about it in the same way that I understand it. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to match my search query because I obviously don't know what I'm talking about. So it's probably the most likely.
Artificial mods to suit you, Greg. You know you're not an idiot. I know you're not an idiot. You know, so, but like now... That said, if Mike's on a forum, yeah, he's thinking like...
Lord have mercy.
Mike is going to get me back. Michael, so will you send me a 46th President of the United States, Chris?
Probably will. I'll send you another Trump one. Yeah.
Oh Jesus! Let's hope not. Let's hope Brexit doesn't happen.
Well, you've got what till October to get it sorted.
Well, no, they have until October to get it sorted.
They do. I love how you keep separating yourself.
Well, that's what happens. You know, colonies separate from their former colonial masters. You know, but I don't like we. We like them as neighbors, and we'd rather them not move out of the neighborhood. We kind of say, but seriously, you're going to dig up your house and move it somewhere else. Why would you do that?
Because you
become
to America.
Well, if you were my neighbor, I could see that.
America.
Yeah, you could come to America, Tom. I think you would be well received in America.
I have to say, I like going to the
US. You are extremely popular over here, and you know you are. You know you're always the center of attention.
I think it's when I start asking questions about when people were talking about flags of the South, and then I went, what was the flag of the North? And then the guys, like, this is a conversation I had in Florida. And I was like, no, seriously, like, what was the flag of the North? You the flag of the Southern States? And they're like, really, Tom? You're going to go there? And I went, no, seriously, like, what was the flag of the North? And they were like, the flag of the United States. And I was like, okay, the one that you're like, oh, it's all right. You know, because for the Southern guys, that could be controversial. So sorry for all the Southern state guys to inform you that you know, hold your hands up to the flag of the North. You know.
Come with a brave.
So, sorry. So maybe I won't be popular anymore.
At least not in the South.
I don't think I'll be able to go south of that one anymore. But I have to say I like the Southern hospitality. I definitely like some of the cities of the North. You know, haven't been to Boston yet.
I haven't either.
I'd be like Irish in Boston as opposed to the more than Irish that live in Boston. If you know what I mean.
I can see you getting there, and then someone telling you that you have a terrible accent, you're just a terrible fake Irishman.
Yeah.
And I just go, yeah, but I can speak Irish. I can speak Gaelic. And we try that. Well, yeah, I believe Chicago has a good Irish contingent in it. You know.
Yeah. 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 That March 17th, we dye our river from a green it naturally is to an unnatural boulder green.
Very nice. So very good. Well, that's that I have to see someday. So you have to give me an excuse now to come to Chicago, Mike. You know, and
just to come see me. That should be enough.
You'd have to invite me, you'd have to like bring me out, wine and dine me and stuff like that, you know. Introduce me to all your friends. I do singing, I could do some entertainment, it'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, we're digressing significantly from the program that we had set for ourselves, so let's just get back.
We have exhausted the list of topics, so this, I think we're at the tail end, unless you guys have some additional nuggets of information that everybody just must have. I think we've reached our climax.
Actually, I do have. There's UK NOF is happening next month. It's going to be in, where is it going to be? Belfast. UK NOF 44 is in Belfast. I'm just pulling it up here.
Belfast.
And UK NOF stands for the United Kingdom Network Operators Forum. And what I try to do is ignore the United Kingdom part. I just say it's all my neighbors forum, and I will join my neighbors forum.
That's so funny.
So it's like NANOG, but worse.
I would say NANOG, but politer. Like I did get given out to because I said hello, lads, on World Women's Day on the forum, and I got like a little bit slapped around the face with a trout on that one. So I'm sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else. And yeah, so basically I kind of got in trouble there. But yeah, no, but it is actually a really cool forum, and I've met some really good people who are regulars there. And yeah, so it's basically, it's on the 10th of September 2019, and it's on in Belfast. So for my UK and Irish friends, I would suggest that if you're anywhere around Belfast, or maybe just, you know, you need a holiday. So to actually my international friends, if you want to go visit Belfast while it's still part of the United Kingdom, or that's a Freudian slip, while it's part of the European Union, even though the majority of Northern Ireland actually voted to stay in European Union. Fortunately, the majority of Wales and England voted to leave.
So it looks like Ireland is about the size of Indiana.
Oh, it's tiny.
Yeah, that's not very big.
It's not very big, but we're actually quite north as well. We're 53 degrees north, which is, you know, pretty. But the I have to also thank my Floridian friends, because the Gulf of Mexico, you know, swings by Miami and then up to Ireland. So Ireland is actually warmer and milder winters than it would otherwise have because of the Gulf Stream, as long as it continues to work.
So you can thank America for your pleasant weather.
Well, for now, but you see, he also abandoned the Paris Climate Accord, so that could actually stop the Gulf Stream, and then we'd be pretty pissed off at you again. So you know, your report card would say, could do better. Just a little bit.
Improvement
for my American friends. Yeah, just saying, you know. But no, like, that's basically, so the UK NOF, and then there's also EuroBSDCon, which is a particular favourite of mine. And that's on in Lillehammer, and that's the 19th to the 22nd of September. So if you have a bucket list, or even an effort list, you know, it rhymes with bucket. You can actually go to, so you can just say bucket, and we're going to go to Belfast, hang around Ireland for a week, and then head on to Lillehammer. And the benefit of that is that you get to see me twice in the 1 month, which is more than most people can handle. But
I can see that.
Yeah,
we'd be delighted to have it. So I think I was okay on the monologue. So whoever passed the comment about the monologues for the last time, if you could just give feedback again. And I'll give it my utmost consideration.
I've only ever gotten positive feedback about having you on these things. People really, really enjoy it. So I don't know where you're getting this. This idea.
Mike said it, so maybe Mike was just bitching. Like, you know the way Mike is.
Sometimes you need somebody to check you every now and then. I get it.
I know, but it's just upsetting, you know. You know, just. He kind of, I don't like when he talks when I'm interrupting, you know, it's very rude.
One interruption at a time.
All right. Look, guys, as always, it's been awesome.
All right, so Tom, if people were to want to get a hold of you, how would they go about that?
Hold on.
Okay,
hold on,
I'm sorry.
Hold on.
Mikey,
hold on.
What?
I wanted to hit on a couple of the platforms that use VXWorks. Going all the way back to the beginning of the show. I'm not going to read the list exhaustively, but there's some interesting things on this list. There is the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the Curiosity Rover, the SpaceX Dragon Capsule, one of the CIA's UAVs, a lot of important stuff there. We got some Volkswagen navigation, a bunch of Renault stuff, Apple Airport Extreme, Drobo NAS device. I'm looking through a couple other things here. A whole lot of Huawei gear. So it seems interesting. It's like, okay, so there's a lot of Huawei gear, and then there's CIA gear. So who was the one that made this exploit?
Well, like, here's the thing. You opened up a can of worms that we must just munch on now. I think it's funny, the whole Huawei security concerns, in that I think other nation states have been quite successful in getting in on gear before, heretofore now, and there's documented cases of it. And I'm not mentioning any nations. Any names like Samuel or anything like that, I would never mention anyone by name or any country by name, but I think Sam has been quite successful, whoever Sam is, getting into gear. So, but yeah, no, the Huawei thing, I've actually bought gear off them in the past, but I find the processes quite lethargic. Like, it's crazy how We ordered a couple of license leaks, so they're kind of, you know, they're not actually internet facing or anything like that, but too precisely. We were meant to order 20, but we couldn't get them quick enough, and so we stopped getting them. But it was just that they're pretty nice gear. I believe they're potentially copies. Very careful with these words. But they're apparently, allegedly, very like some Ericsson gear back in the day, the radio stuff.
And, yeah.
I believe the networking gear was very like equipment company that rhymes with San Francisco. But I wouldn't know now.
Yeah. Well, I know this Huawei kind of moratorium the government's placed on them, this is nothing new. So in the data center world, for years, as far back as I've been in the data center world, working with government organizations, they always had a mandate where if you're handing them connectivity or any carrier is handing them connectivity, they would have to know every piece of equipment in the path, and it could not rise or ride a piece of equipment that has Chinese manufacturing software. So, I mean, they could be fabbed in China, like all the hardware can come from China, but the software could not originate from China and carry government information. So new.
I think it makes sense. I think there's a lot of hyperbole about how Huawei mightn't be entirely justified. Let me put it that way. I think there's probably more of a risk to anyone is with their mobile phones, rather, you know, in terms of surveillance and stuff like that, than with, like, let's say, internet or core manufacturers, because a lot of that stuff is segregated anyway and off-net. But I think that one of the primary concerns, according to some unnamed government officials of unnamed countries that were, let's say, that were covered in the Register, .co.uk, it's a very good news outlet, particularly technology-based news outlet. But what they were saying was the issue was a kill switch in the event of a war or something like that. So that they were afraid that not so much about espionage per se, but that effectively, you know, one of the key things you do when you're, you know, rule book of war is where you're going in, you try and take out their command and control infrastructure of your adversary. So I'm afraid that if you have all the stuff embedded, that eventually that someone could just send the kill switch and then that's it, they're all gone. And like it is one of those things that I think manufacturers don't do that well, is disclose how much connectivity the device has with other servers out, you know, outside your organization, and why they're doing that. And that a CVV, like for instance an NTP or a time update, and I'm actually talking about, like an example of this would be Microtix. You turn off the cloud feature, but yet it still knows your public IP, stuff like that. That you kind of go, well, why can't I just turn this off completely? But I would think it all would make sense if you're running a country's network, you're best off buying hardware from that country or its country's closest allies. So that I think makes sense, you know. So in terms of the States, yeah, buy American. If you're Chinese, buy, you know, Huawei or whatever, you know, or if you're in Russia, buy, you know, Russian or, and you know, but I do think it's one of those interesting geopolitical problems that where CBD, like some of the accusations was based on just teleports being open. You know, how many equipment manufacturers have we come across where there's a benign reason for it? It can be potentially serious, yes, and it's connected to a classified network, but the reality is sometimes it's just a software programmer doing a diagnostics that forgets to comment out a piece of debug code and suddenly
people being sloppy.
Report that's open. Now, you know, but like that said, like everyone, including myself, is guilty of sloppiness at some point or another. We've only a certain amount of time, and it's very difficult to get everything right all the time. Yeah. And I'd be first to admit, the man who has never made a mistake has never made a decision, and I've made an awful lot of decisions. Consequently, a hell of a lot of mistakes along the way as well, you know. So, but it is the VxWorks stuff. I think it's actually a pretty nice OS. I do like some of the Dell switches that I've seen. I like it. I've always liked it as a, you know, I thought it was always a very clean system to work with. What did you think, or have you used much with VxWorks yourselves? VxWorks based equipment.
I know I've used some stuff that had it, because it VxWorks was all over like the login banner. I just don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I can't remember what the stuff was.
But I mean, you know, there's just a huge, you know, Alcatel Lucent, Avaya, Cisco, Ciena, Dell, Ericsson, HP, HughesNet, Motorola, Nortel, Radware, Samsung, SonicWall, Radvision, Zone, Oracle. I mean, obviously not everything from these people, but all these people have.
Oh, they have tools in them. Yeah, but that's one of the things that I laugh about. If you look at all these servers that you build up with it, and a lot of the remote access controller, the BMC controllers, the IPMI stuff, the security level, I would be very concerned about them as a potential entry point into any of our networks. And I mean that, like if you look at it when they say, oh, you must enable Java 1.4, like, I mean, you know, if you have a, you know, there's some of these really dated Java implementations running Drax, and I'm hoping they're not connected. No, if they're connected to the internet, they're already gone. But like, you know, you have these devices which are extremely soft, connected to very sensitive, usually very sensitive equipment in your organization. And I think that's when I kind of hear criticisms of Huawei per se. I kind of say there's a hell of a lot of, let's say American or British or, you know, European manufacturers that depend on dated Java technology in hardware, and it's hard to keep it up to date, you know, but it's a real concern. I think that's as big a concern I'd have, not from a, there, if I understand it correctly, Trump's concern about Huawei is a state actor have control of their kit. Okay, so that's that one. What I am concerned about some of our friendlier countries' manufacturers is that you can have anyone have control of your, you know, because of the soft security implementations around the DRAC. And it, you don't even have to go too far. Like all these side channel attacks that have been available on the, you know, the Intel chips because of, let's say, the, you know, their drive for optimization, unfortunately, at a cost of security. And and now we're, you know, it's going to take a couple of years to wash all that, those problems out in terms of, you know, like I'm seeing it on OpenBSD. Between 2017 and 2019, there's a 33% drop in network forwarding performance. Now, so we're a lot of people, you know, and I think that's across the board. I don't think it's just OpenBSD, but is that the Spectre meltdown mitigations, the side channel attack mitigations, have required less cache flushes and all this type of stuff. They've actually meant that certain optimizations that you took for granted, you can no longer do it. So there's been about 25 to 30% drop in network performance in the past 2 years on, you know, on the equivalent hardware. You know, where normally, you know, the software development cycle, things are getting faster. And there's a real cost there. And what I'm trying to say is that if there's fundamental problems on the CPUs and stuff like that, which obviously make Intel a hell of a lot of money, the network hardware and the remote access controllers, obviously there's not as big a market for them, and how much attention is paid to them. You know, I do think that it has to be a worry for CIOs and CSOs out there when you're dependent on these techs. You know, what's your opinion? Sorry for the monologue again, Mike. It was a good introduction. I appreciate it.
I already threw my 2 cents in there. What do you got, Mike?
But I think a lot of it's probably okay as long as you do your own due diligence or that of someone trusted. And this came up in a different avenue today. I was asking about cameras. You know, what cameras, you know, what cameras people like. And I was saying, you know, not Ubiquiti cameras, because I'm getting tired of them screwing everything up. Not Hikvision, I'm not even trying to pronounce this other one, Dahua.
Why not those? Do you mind me asking?
Because the U.S. government has banned those two manufacturers and anyone that OEMs from them in all of their installations, which then means that other governments in the U.S. will adopt the same ban because, well, if the feds say we can't have this, then we can't have this. And I just don't want to teach people multiple platforms. Teach people, you know, keep up on multiple things. You know, brand A is this, brand B is that. Just find one thing that works.
Axis and the like are the ones that they want to see.
Sure, yeah. They just cost $800 a camera. And I'd rather spend $800 on the whole installation, not per camera. So this guy would say, yeah, you know, I use this brand, but you have to have it on a network that's isolated from the internet because for the moment it powers on, it's talking to some IPs in China and it's not DNS, it's not NTP, it's just Chinese. I have no idea what it is. I'm like, you know what?
What's called remote configuration servers, RCS or remote deployment service, and that's the benign reason. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there's other. I don't think everything on the internet is bad, but it can be bad. So how do we analyze the risk? But you have to remember that a lot of the people who develop these. So I'm saying this on the benign side. You have an engineer who's enthusiastic and is going, I'd really like to see where all these cameras are being deployed. I'm not going to necessarily do a whole lot of bad things with it. But then there's the, you know, you saw it with the malware attack that you know, was a WannaCry, where your man registered the DNS name, and then it killed the propagation of the attack worldwide. I believe he was arrested by the FBI then at DEF CON or something like that. What's his name? MalwareTech, I think, or... Anyway, but anyway, I forget his name, sorry. But basically, a guy kind of was analyzing that, an infected computer would do a DNS request to a domain that didn't exist. So this guy registered the domain just thinking maybe he'd capture more information. But when he actually registered the domain, it actually stopped. It actually acted as a kill switch for the device. So that is, let's say, an example of where you can sell a load of equipment to a country, go to war with them, and then say, well, I'm going to register this domain name and all their CCTV cameras could just go. That's the more, let's say, the, you know, doomsday Orwellian type analysis of, you know, which what I think is probably very benign. Like if I was to look at, and I haven't done a capture of a Microtech router doing the whole cloud thing, like what information is it sending? I'm not too sure. Like is there serial, you know, is there serial number information being passed through in hex or something like that? I don't know. I'm not saying, and I'm not making accusations, just to be clear. But it's that kind of lack of ability to turn it off is a concern. Or any of those manufacturers in that case. So my point is that some of it can be just an electronic engineer doing something above his pay grade with potentially, political consequences far beyond what he even intended to do, or she intended to do. And you know, that there's no malice at all. But then, as to what you're saying, Mike, yeah, what the fact? You buy a camera and suddenly it's dialing back, you know, ET phone at home and all this type of crack. It scares the crap out of me. But if you look at a phone nowadays, and the amount of data it's doing, and the amount of apps, and they say, oh, we must have access to your microphone, and we must have access to your contacts, and you're like, dude, you're a effing calculator. Why do you need access? You know, it's just like, what the... So there is that type of... tendency for companies just by default to say, let's just harvest data. But then again, if you're getting something for free, they have to make money somehow through it. Yeah. And that's a real concern that maybe we as a society should start thinking about, should I pay for something and have my privacy as opposed to being, you know, having my privacy invaded by default so I can have stuff for free. I don't know how much of the data, but you know, when you that Google or any phone manufacturer harvest, but I know that there are documented cases where Google have, you know, said that their Wi-Fi cameras were collecting Wi-Fi SSIDs and, you know, GPS coordinates back in the day. While it's useful, I think, for GPS, there's another, and, you know, locating phones in the field and helping with location accuracy in the absence of maybe GPS cover or something like that. But unfortunately, there's far more sinister uses of that data. That is concerning.
Well, I mean, too, think about if just the fact that manufacturer is collecting all that information, maybe it is completely benign and it'll never leave. But what happens if their systems are compromised and all that information is harvested from them, right? So even if it is on the up and up, how can we trust them to completely protect this information that they're getting from us?
Yeah, and like, where is the documentation of what they're collecting and why they're collecting
and how they're storing it? You know.
And I think what's interesting is the companies that get asked that question or have the ability to kind of go, okay, we're launching this product, we're collecting this data. Why? What would happen? And if you do a risk assessment, if their own CSOs or CIOs or CTOs, you know, if they're operating cross-function, when they actually analyze and go, what's the risk? And if they have a good risk management strategy, they'll kind of go, do you know what? Fuck this. We don't want this data. You know, they'll actually kind of go, no, let's just, let's call it a day, cancel that, don't comment out the code, remove it, we don't want to see it again. It's, you know, kill it with fire. And we often see that where, you know, if you're doing a simple brochure website, you know, when we're doing hardening for customers, might have a brochure site and they have a contact us form and they have a login and they have, you know, this kind of customer engagement thing. And you ask them, why are you doing this? And they said, well, you know, it's great for customer engagement. And, well, do you really, really want to do it like this? Because now you've a whole information assets, you've increased the risk. It's not no longer just a website that, you know, tells people about the products. It's now, it contains user and customer data. And so then the level of risk goes up and the level, particularly with, we have a thing called GDPR, General Data Protection Regulation. And the thing about regulations are interesting in the EU in that a regulation is across the board. It's enforced from day one and it's European law and it's above, let's say, national law. So that's why generally the regulation ones are the ones to watch. A good friend of mine who's a lawyer was explaining it to me that he goes, that's why since directives are different in the EU. So what would happen is the European Commission and Parliament would say, oh, we want to ban certain substances. So they would say, they'd issue a directive, which is a different thing where they would say, bring this into law and you have 2 or 3 years to do it and transpose the European law into your own national law and it'll be all cool. And that's, and it's a far more kind of nuanced process. But the GDPR was like, after the whole, probably the Snowden affair and all that type of stuff and Angela Merkel's phone being tapped and all that, that kind of probably gave a huge amount of impetus and demand from a privacy perspective in Europe to actually do something about it. Because the GDPR is quite a stringent set of requirements for operators who collect data. And it actually changed, I think, a lot the way a lot of companies view collecting data, and they try to avoid it if at all possible. You know, you can collect data if you have a legitimate business reason to do it and you get user consent. And you can hang on to it for as long as you have a legitimate business reason to do so. So for instance, medical reasons, you know, medical records can be kept for quite a long time because they need to be. Tax records. But you can collect data and just store it forever. You know, you have to have a valid reason for it. And then just, you know, so it's quite an interesting area that I've just digressed again. Mm-hmm. Really.
So I've got a hard stop. I got some stuff I got to go do. So I'm gonna cut it off. I'm gonna cut it. You got to cut it, bruh. So
okay,
Tom.
How are you reachable?
Tom, how are you reachable on the internet if people want to get a hold of you?
Brothers with Flag Town. It's a pretty good one. LinkedIn, Skype, I'm also on WhatsApp, and you can also get me by post.
Oh, nice.
Snail mail.
I have.
Yeah, he did actually. He hit me up. Sent me a nice Trump Christmas tree decoration, which
you cherish.
Very
good. Yeah.
It was funny though, because I remember like opening it and I went, okay, who sent me this? I started laughing. My wife was kind of shocked and I said, I think it's one of my American friends having a nice. Do you have an Obama one? Because you're from Chicago, right? You must have 43rd president, no?
No, I do not have any Obama memorabilia.
I'm sure he could work something out.
I thought you'd have had like or Rahm Emanuel, is this, you know, is he still your mayor of Chicago?
No, he decided not to run this last term, so early this spring we got a new one.
And what is he slash she like?
Well, Chicago never elects anybody that's worth a darn, so... But they seem to be, they're like a former federal prosecutor, and Chicago's lots of corruption, so hopefully that means something.
All right.
Lots of corruption.
Let's see. Well, I mean, that's why Mike lives there, you know, for familiar territory.
Yeah.
All right, Mikey, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they go about that?
In the unlikely event that people want to get a hold of me, Mike.
You owe money or something like that, you know.
Sorry.
I'll say the Little Brothers Wisp Slack channel because then somebody else will probably help you before I will. I'm busier now.
One armed paper hanger. Let's see. You can get a hold of me, Greg at gregsoul.com. Email gregsoul.com has a contact form. I still occasionally blog on there. I think I'm going to be doing some stuff on Ansible here pretty soon. I guess if you want to join this Slack everybody keeps talking about, there's a buzz. People are getting into this. It's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. You throw us a couple of bones, and we fire you off an invite to the Slack, and there's a ton of channels, ton of good discourse. There's no such thing as a stupid question, only stupid people, obviously. So really good question and answer, very good discussion, and a lot of really good viewpoints, right? So you're getting, people that are mostly server guys, or people that are mostly VoIP guys, or people that are really just hardcore network, or that you get, we have a couple of know-it-all geniuses in there. And then there's Mike and I, so, kind of rounding out the bottom of the barrel, bud.
And we even have an OpenBSD channel.
Yeah, it's full of crickets. There's chirp, chirp. There's a silence in there.
You can get me on Twitter as well. We're on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, Twitter. Yeah. Twitter, and follow Tom on Twitter. New campaign.
And the Brothers Wisp, follow us on Twitter as well. Oh.
Yeah, and I tweeted recently, and then you trolled my tweet, Mike.
Yeah,
I did no such thing.
So facebook.com/thebrotherswisp, that is Mike. So he's pumping out that good information. I think it gets duplicated over to Twitter and maybe even Instagram. If you guys have any questions or comments, please throw them at us. Contact us at thebrotherswisp.com, throw them on Facebook, or probably the easiest way is to go on the Slack channel and ask a question there, and it gets answered very quickly.
Sorry for interrupting, but Mike, is it true that you were working for Cambridge Analytica? Were you the Chicago chapter of Cambridge Analytica?
Yes.
You distributing targeted fake news,
All right. Sorry. I got to get out of here. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. We'll see you guys soon.
We're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts. We're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry. You're forgiven.